Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Today, this is our Ipawur show.
The Ipawur show. Ipawur, a rich man.
Yeah, that's
this
right.
Guy's great. I mean, he's an eyewitness to the plagues of Egypt and the aftermath.
And Fred, I'd like to do something that's never been done in the history of broadcasting.
Never, ever. What's that?
Probably for good reason. I'd like us to share with the audience what Ipawur really was all about. Because when you read articles about it, the atheists say, well, that's ridiculous. Ipawur has nothing to do with the Exodus. No similarities. It's just ridiculous. But when you read Ipawur, he's just shouting out, I saw the plagues. I saw Moses. I saw the whole thing. It's horrific.
Oh, yeah. It just example after example. This guy is an eyewitness to the Exodus,
yes.
To the plagues. It is so cool. How many people know that this even exists, right?
Yeah, the vast majority of people have no idea. So I'd like to do that, but a little of our due diligence first. Let's let the audience know where this papyrus is right now today.
In Leiden, Holland, it's on display at the Dutch National Museum of Antiquities.
Yeah. And it was discovered way, way back in 1828. So, you know, almost 200 years
ago. Yeah, a long time ago. Then they translated it almost a century later.
1909, this Professor Alan Gardner, a British guy, Sir Alan Gardner.
Yeah.
And he misnamed it right off the bat. He mistitled it.
Yeah, the Admonitions of an Egyptian Sage. Now, admonitions, that's not quite right.
No, because admonition is a warning. This is a lament.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what it is. It's a bewailing, a bemoaning.
I can't believe this is happening.
Of the destruction of the land. There's 17 sections.
Yeah, the Hindenburg,
short.
All the humanity.
Yeah. If you printed out the whole thing of Ipawur, it'd be 11 pages in total. So it's short. And only one section could possibly be considered an admonition. But that's because the anti-Exodus experts totally misread that section.
Yep.
It's section 11, and Ipawur is mocking them. As we'll see as we go through the excerpts, he is being sarcastic. Like, the king is so happy.
Yeah.
The people are so happy. There's happiness
yep.
everywhere.
Obvious sarcasm.
It's all in ruins. Yep. And so in that section 11, too, it's sarcasm. He's saying, well, go ahead, sacrifice to your gods. That's what we got to do. You know, and that's what they'd been doing the whole time.
Kind of reminds me of Elijah at Mount Carmel.
Yes. Wow. Exactly. When he said to the prophets of Baal, what did he say? Yell louder to your God.
Yeah, yell louder. Is he in the bathroom?
Right.
Pretty much.
Right. He's probably in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yell louder so he hears you. Maybe he's on vacation.
Yeah.
And then he executed all of them.
All of them.
250 prophets of Baal.
Yep.
And God really loved Elijah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow. He's one of the two guys that didn't see death, right?
That's right. Enoch and Elijah
yep.
went to be with the Lord, and I believe they'll come back during the Great Tribulation.
I do too, actually.
They'll be those two prophets, right?
Yeah, since all man's appointed to die once, so they'll have to die eventually.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Even though, yeah, okay.
Awesome.
Anyway, another story.
Okay, so here's our analysis of Ipawur. He's giving eyewitness testimony of the collapse of Egypt because of the plagues, and then the aftermath. And his major theme is that the rich are now poor, and the poor are now rich.
Yeah, wow.
That will come across in the excerpts. What would it have taken, Fred, if, say, the wealth of America back in the 1800s were to be transferred to black people? I mean, it's inconceivable.
Yeah, it is.
It could never happen, and that's what the experts, the Egyptologists say. Well, this could never have happened. The poor in Egypt cannot be destroyed, and the poor become wealthy. That's their main argument, that the nation is destroyed, and the rich become poor, and the poor become wealthy. That is their number one argument that they repeat most often of why this cannot be true it has no connection to Exodus. But if the poor have a supernatural champion and God is going to war against the gods of the Egyptians and making a point, then this is exactly...
In a way, they're enforcing our point. They're saying this can't ever happen. It's impossible.
Right.
And so but the fact that there's one place in the history of man that this is documented in historical writing. I mean, the Bible in many regards is also a historical document.
Right.
It's documented there. It happened.
Yeah. And then Ippower says this, and I'll give a hint, dozens of times his 11 pages, dozens of times that the poor have become wealthy because they took everything and they wanted from the rich.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you just make that up?
Exactly.
The atheists think
it was an amazing thing to him. That's why he repeated it so much.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't believe this.
Right. That would be the reality of your reaction to seeing the Exodus occur. The stunning parallels that are in Ippower with Exodus, the Egyptologists quote them to say, well, this could have nothing to do with the Exodus. Can't possibly. We can't even imagine it. So if they could drop their hubris just for a moment, because really, that criticism comes from only one place. Their insistence that there is no God.
That's right. That's right. Spiritual.
And that God has never intervened in human affairs.
Yep.
Jesus Christ is not the fulfillment of prophecy. He is not the Passover lamb. None of this has anything to do with reality. If they could drop that hubris just for a moment, they would see the stunning agreement between Ippower and the Bible.
It's totally obvious.
Yeah. So Genesis prophesied of what would happen, and then the book of Exodus tells us.
So this was the prophecy of God back in Genesis chapter 15, which predicted Israel's enslavement in a foreign land. Hmm. So here's how it goes. The nation whom they serve, I will judge. Afterward, they shall come out with great possessions.
Wow.
So that's the prophecy.
And it was written back in Genesis.
Back in Genesis.
Well, by Moses, who did write it afterward.
That's right. And so in Exodus 12, Moses writes, now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus, they plundered the Egyptians.
They plundered them.
Yep.
That's Ippower.
Yep, and Egyptians were giving them this stuff.
So Ippower reports that as Egypt collapses, the poor became wealthy, and it is uncanny. He reports that the river turns to blood, yet the palace stands firm. And why is that? Because Pharaoh's heart was hard, yet eventually...
It didn't sway him. That one didn't.
Yes. Eventually, his residence, the palace, is in ruin. So now, Fred, let's do what's never been done.
It's like we're interviewing an eyewitness to the Exodus.
Yeah, sort of, and we let him talk.
Yeah.
Ippower, tell us, what did you see? And he begins, section 1 of 17 begins with the servants. He's quoting the servants, saying, let us go and plunder. The watchman refuses to carry his load. And so I'd like the audience, or maybe you and I, to count how many times Ippower says that the poor become wealthy.
Yeah, okay.
So here, the servants say, let us go plunder, and the watchman refuses to carry his load. But let's not count that, because it says that the slaves want to plunder, and they refuse to work.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say they got rich, so let's not count that
Okay.
The inhabitants of the Delta carry shields. Remember the Nile Delta? That's where the land of Goshen was. Mm-hmm. So the Israelites had left, and then the foreigners came in and invaded through the Delta.
Egypt was very much exposed.
Yeah. So then Ippower says there's confusion. The virtuous man, and to Ippower, that'd be the leading Egyptians.
Yeah, because he's an Egyptian.
Yeah. The virtuous man goes in mourning because of what has happened in the land. The tribes of the desert have become Egyptians everywhere. Now, what does that mean, the tribes of the desert? I think it means that they can't keep the foreigners out anymore.
Yeah.
So all the nations around them just come in. They become Egyptians. And they just take whatever. They live in their homes. They take whatever they want.
He says the face is pale, Wrongdoing is everywhere, and there's no man of yesterday.
Yeah, so like the old days are gone.
Yep.
Indeed, the plunderer is everywhere, and the servant takes what he finds. Would you say that's...
Yeah, I think that's definitely...
So that's our first
time. Let's count that as the first one.
Okay. Indeed, the Nile overflows, yet none plow for it. So Ipuwer is writing about the devastation of the plagues and the aftermath. So now he has the hindsight of perhaps a few years, and he's writing about what life in Egypt is like, and the Nile overflows, yet none plow for it.
Yeah.
You know, we all learned in ancient history the core cycle for Egypt's agriculture was the inundation of the Nile and their fertile floodplain. So here it is in the aftermath, and they haven't recovered enough to work the land. In fact, as he just said, if an Egyptian does work the field, he has to take a shield for self-defense.
Yeah, amazing.
So, and by the way, the Nile, the height of the Nile's flow is from mid-July to October. So everyone says, we do not know what will happen throughout the land. So what's to come of us? Indeed, the women are barren and none conceive. So, Fred, after the 10 plagues.
And that wasn't one of the plagues, right?
No, it was not barrenness, but they're reeling in the aftermath. And women would think, well, how can I bring a child into this world?
Yeah.
So
you'd have a drop, definitely, in pregnancies.
We'll see more of that.
Yep.
So that's the short section one. Section two of Ipuwer's 17 sections. Indeed, poor men have become owners of wealth.
Okay. That's the second time.
Second time. And he who could not make sandals for himself is now a possessor of riches.
Wow.
Third time, I'd say. Indeed, men's slaves, and then it breaks off. Pestilence is throughout the land. Blood is everywhere. Death is not lacking. The mummy cloth speaks even before one comes near it.
Wow.
Now, that's creepy.
That is. I mean, he's really pushing home the point of all this death.
Yeah, the rituals that they use to the burial rituals, it's like they're reaching out to those who are still living in expectation of their soon demise.
Yeah.
You know, there's a Bible verse like that. We just completed our verse-by-verse study of Isaiah. And in chapter 14, where it talks about the fall of Lucifer, it says, hell from beneath is excited about you to meet you at your coming. It stirs up the dead for you.
Ooh, man.
That is so creepy.
That's big time creepy.
And that's like what Ipuwer is saying here. The mummy cloth speaks out before the people even come near the mummy cloth.
Yeah.
It's trying to wrap itself around them. Indeed, noblemen are in distress, while the poor man is full of joy.
Well, obviously, that's another example. That's what, number four?
Yeah, fourth time. Every town says, let us suppress the powerful among us.
Wow.
So, suppress the powerful. You know, who's doing the suppressing? Probably the poor.
Yep.
And so that could be, I don't know if we want to call that a sixth. Squalor is throughout the land. Indeed, the land turns around as does a potter's wheel. The robber is a possessor of riches.
Wow. Again, a seventh time.
And I love the potter's wheel analogy of the land turning. It's like it's turning over.
Yeah.
So that now the rich are poor and the poor are rich.
Yeah.
Indeed, trusty servants are, and then the text can't be read there. It's called the lacuna. It's when there is something missing in a portion of a manuscript, a lacuna. And there are a number of those here in Ipuwer's papyrus.
And you get that a lot through a lot of historical texts throughout history, right?
Right?
Shakespeare, tons of his stuff's missing.
Yeah.
What's missing from the New Testament, by the way?
From the New Testament, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
And like there are thousands,
over 100,000 transcripts.
There's thousands of handwritten manuscripts.
Yeah. In the Church Fathers' letters, you can almost recreate the entire New Testament.
It's awesome, isn't it?
It is. It's incredible.
Comparing the Bible and the ancient record for the Bible to all other ancient literature, the Bible stands head and shoulders, bar none, in the most extraordinary
way. Oh, yeah. Blows them all away.
So there's this lacuna here, this missing text, but it says, indeed, trusty servants are, and then there's something missing, And then something about the poor man, but we can't make it out, another lacuna.
Yeah.
Then, how terrible, what am I to do? Indeed, the river is blood.
Yeah, the river is blood, and yet men drink of it.
Yeah, what choice did they have,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Even the water in their pots looked like blood.
Yeah. Remember when Moses struck his rod on the Nile, mm-hmm, and it turned to blood, and all the standing water turned to blood everywhere. So they were digging next to the Nile to try to get fresh water.
Right, exactly. Indeed, gates, columns, and walls are burnt up. So Ipuwer says now, and there was fire. Fred, on the internet, I saw an atheist mocking a Christian who was quoting from Ipuwer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christian mentioned this line and said it was the plague of fire.
Yeah.
And so the atheist said, there was no plague of fire, you idiot, blah, 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 blah. But he was wrong. Remember the seventh plague of hail? Moses described that in a very interesting way.
Yeah, he did. In Exodus 9, the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground.
Yeah, so Ipuwer was right.
Absolutely.
Moses was right, and that atheist was wrong.
Of course.
And then Ipuwer immediately writes this, the hall of the palace stands firm and endures. So the palace stands firm. That is Pharaoh.
Pharaoh stood firm.
And Moses, just a few verses later after that plague, writes in Exodus chapter 9, when Pharaoh saw that the hail had ceased, he hardened his heart.
Yep.
So the way Ipuwer worded that verse was like this. The hall of the palace stands firm and endures. And you get the sense that he wanted to add about Pharaoh, you fool.
Yeah, come on.
You know, you fool, for Moses actually did add something like that in the very next verse.
He did. He said, so the heart of Pharaoh was hard, neither would he let the children of Israel go.
Yeah. And so, by the way, that translator in 1909, Gardner, Sir Alan Gardner.
Of that papyrus of the Ipuwer.
Yeah, the Egyptologist.
Yep.
He sees this as a contradiction, he says. You know, they like to argue, well, this has to be just some imagination because it can't be historical.
Yep.
The number one reason is because if a nation's destroyed, the poor can't become rich. But then he says here, he says, well, it's a contradiction because it says the palace was firm, but then it says the palace is overturned.
Yeah.
And it can't be firm and overturned. It's like, why not? Isn't that the way it always goes? Saddam Hussein was firm, and then he was in a spider hole.
A spider hole, remember?
We found him in the special.
Yep.
And then he's dead.
Yep.
So that is the way it goes. You know, I like C.S. Lewis, how he says it right. Everybody says you can't have your cake and eat it too. And I've always thought, why not? I always have my cake and then I eat it.
Yeah.
What do? Have it to not eat it? Of course you have your cake. But C.S. Lewis puts it the other way around. He says, you can't eat your cake and have it too. That's much better. Because if you eat it, then you don't have it.
Okay.
But at any rate, that's the thing here with Ipuwer. Pharaoh was firm, but then he was destroyed. So how these Egyptologists, with all their learning, you know, the Bible describes these kinds of people, with all their learning, they have become fools.
Yeah, absolutely. And the calisthenics they have to go through, but we see it with everything. Of course, we see it with, you know, our number one topic here, evolution.
Yes. Evolution, the Big Bang.
All the things that they do to come to try to get around these obvious evidences against their worldview.
Exactly. Indeed, towns are destroyed, and Upper Egypt has become an empty waste. Indeed, it is the destruction of the land. The frightened man cannot distinguish because of terror. Indeed, men are few, and he who places his brother in the ground is everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, they were seeing all kinds of stuff. Not a great time to be living in Egypt. And then, of course, the 10th plague, right? The biggest one of all, the death of the firstborn sons.
Yeah.
The oldest sons of every family of the Egyptians, every family.
Yeah.
And you know, their cattle.
And then the Bible speaks of the loud wailing
throughout
Egypt.
Egypt.
Worse than ever. But for the Israelites, not a dog will be heard barking at an animal.
Wow. Yeah.
What a difference, right? So Ipuwer continues, indeed, the well-born man, through lack of recognition, and the child of his lady has become the son of his maidservant.
Wow. Yeah, that's the seventh that I count.
I think that it is, because the well-born man now lacks recognition, and his servant even claims his heirs. Yeah. So that's got to be the seventh.
Yep.
Okay, now we go to section 3 of the Ipuwer Papyrus. Indeed, the desert is throughout the land. And I'd say that's because when the crops die, the desert encroaches.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the soil can't be retained by the roots, and it blows away. The desert encroaches. So the desert is throughout the land. The gnomes are laid waste. Remember, we talked about
that. Yeah, we talked about that in a prior show. You know, the gnomes, these are these like provinces.
Yeah,
regional authority that had big-time power. These were, you know,
Egypt
distributed around.
Egypt had a diversified governance.
Yeah.
It wasn't
spread
centralized.
Out over different large groups or municipalities, whatever you want to call them. They were called gnomes. And at one time, the nation had about 40 of these and 20 each in the upper and lower Egypt.
So I think, Fred, this is a poetic reference to the entirety of the land.
Yeah,
of
the
Egypt.
Gnomes are laid waste.
Yes. And barbarians from abroad have come to Egypt. And that's exactly what would happen after
exactly.
the nation and the army is destroyed.
The entire army is destroyed in the Red Sea.
Yeah, drowned. The government is decapitated. The land ravaged.
Yep.
So people come in to take what they want.
What would happen today if Israel's army was totally destroyed?
Oh, boy, this is exactly would happen.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Within a very short period of time. Indeed, men arrive, and then a lacuna. And indeed, there are no Egyptians anywhere. And so I think that is, there are no Egyptians to repel the invaders. That's what he means.
Yeah.
The men arrive, all these barbarians from abroad come to Egypt. There are no Egyptians to defend the land. So this is the aftermath of the collapse. Indeed, gold, silver, and turquoise are strung on the necks of the maidservants.
So ding, 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 ding. That's the eighth time.
Eighth time.
The eighth reference.
That Ipuwer is making this his theme. Good things are throughout the land. So now that's interesting. I thought the land was destroyed. But the good things, well, they're among the servants. You know, the Jews didn't lose any of their livestock. And then all the servants and slaves who remained, who were not Hebrews, they took whatever they wanted of the wealth of the rich. So Ipuwer writes, good things are throughout the land, yet housewives say, oh, that we had something to eat.
Yeah, man.
Indeed, noble women, their bodies are in sad plight by reason of their rags, and their hearts sink when greeting one another. So I don't think we could call that the ninth time, Fred, because it says the rich are now poor, but it doesn't say that the servants are rich.
Yeah.
So to continue, indeed, the builders, and here the translators believe this is the builders of pyramids, have become cultivators. In other words, the architects are now planting their survival gardens behind their shacks. There's something about mummies, something about the priests are buried. And then continuing, gold is lacking. And God told them, take all the gold.
Exactly.
And they did.
Right.
Gold is lacking, and materials for every kind of craft have come to an end. The palace is spoiled.
Wow.
So this is where, you know, Pharaoh was standing firm by his hard heart. But here, Ipuwer remembers that then it was destroyed.
Yep.
And then Ipuwer writes something about, indeed, Elephantine, and that's that well-known city in the middle of the Nile. It's the Elephantine Island.
Yeah, in southern Egypt.
Yeah, and Ipuwer says, indeed, Elephantine and Thinis, and Thinis was Egypt's capital at first, their first known capital. Then he writes, of Upper Egypt, people come, but without paying taxes, owing to civil strife, lacking our grain, charcoal, and then something about the prophet of the palace. So this is really interesting to me. To what purpose is a treasury without its revenues?
But this doesn't sound anything like the Exodus model.
No, right. And it sounds so much like the Exodus, not only because Egypt is destroyed, but the implication here, in fact, it comes right out and says it, that people are not paying taxes, but they are lacking in grain, and what good is a treasury without revenue? And something about the prophet of the palace, Remember, Joseph set up a system of storage granaries, and that was revenue to the government. So that probably continued. Now there is no grain, and the palace is not making a profit. And what good is its treasury anymore? Then he writes, "Happy indeed is the heart of the king."
Wow.
So that is his mocking
Absolutely.
Sarcasm.
Definitely.
And Fred, how could it be that the Egyptologists miss that when they get to section 11? They miss the mocking sarcasm because they want to make the whole thing non-Exodus-like.
Yep.
And really historically irrational. So happy, happy, happy is the heart of the king. And every foreign land comes, that's to plunder what remains. That is our fate, Ippur writes, and that is our happiness.
That is our happiness.
Oh, brother. So the foreigners have their way with
Egypt. So he's repeating that again, too.
Yes.
The foreigners coming in.
Yeah, he describes as our happiness that what's happened. So he's mocking, and notice the irony of it all. Then he writes, "What can we do about it? All
is ruin." Wow.
"Indeed, laughter is perished." So here, he's not being sarcastic. He's coming out of character, so to speak, and he's saying the truth. "Laughter is perished, and it's no longer made," something like that. "It is groaning that is throughout the land, mingled with complaints." And the Bible says the wailing was throughout the land.
Throughout the land.
Yeah. Section 4. "Indeed, every dead person is as a well-born man."
Wow. So it's almost like they're the lucky ones.
Right. They're like the well-born men. "Those who were Egyptians have become foreigners and are thrust aside." In other words, they're foreigners in their own land.
That's right. Yep.
"Indeed, the man of rank can no longer be distinguished from him who is nobody." I don't know. Could we count that one? Maybe not. Where the poor, I mean, it implies that the poor have become rich because the man of rank is.
Yeah, the men of power.
They're like the people who were nobody. But okay, let's not count it. "Indeed, there is no end of noise." And again, the wailing throughout the land. And not just for a night, of course, but from then for a long time. "Indeed, great and small say, I wish I might die." And now, Fred, Ippur uses poetic language to say that a terrible thing, infanticide, has occurred, and that the Egyptians evidently killed their own children, thinking them better off dead. Because, like you said, every dead person is as a well-born man.
Yeah. So, and unfortunately, this is kind of like pro-abortion Americans today, right?
Oh, exactly. They think that they kill their children because they'll be better off. That's what pro-abort defenders, that's what they say. "Do you want these children to be born?" And then they say, Fred, we go to the abortion mill hundreds of times. Denver Bible Church, over 1,000 babies have been saved, confirmed saves, where the mom had a scheduled abortion. And she's talked to us and often cried and the baby saved. But so many who are there and the lesbian pro-abort counter-protesters who come against us, the witches and all those, they'll say, "Oh, yeah, well, would you want your wife to have a baby if she was raped by a black man?" And we say, "What are you, a racist?"
Yeah.
"What are you? You liberal child killer, you're obviously also a racist, thinking that a black child whose father was a criminal should be killed."
Yeah. It's worse if it's a black child.
What does his race have to do with it?
Exactly.
In fact, Joe Scott, Ken and Joe Scott attend our church. They're heroes.
Oh, absolutely.
She was at a pro-life event on the East Coast, went to the home of an abortionist, rang the door, and he came out, and they got this on video. It was on YouTube. YouTube took it down. He said, "What do you want, all these little ugly black babies?"
Wow.
And, I mean, what a racist. He was a white guy. Yeah. What a racist.
Yeah, big time. And that goes back to Margaret Sanger and her clearly racist attitude.
The founder of Planned Parenthood.
And they wanted to make a holiday out of her and here in Colorado. Can you believe that?
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And like that full page ad of the New York Times, right, about infanticide, allowing you to kill your children up to, 1 year old?
And Fred, it wasn't an ad. It was an article on the cover of the New York Times Weekend Edition.
On the cover.
It was.
Wow.
We report this at our website, rsr.org/infanticide. A full article saying it should be legal to kill your baby up to some few months of age.
Just yep. Things don't change under the sun.
At AmericanRightToLife.org, AmericanRTL.org/infanticide, you can see the list of all the pro-choice leaders who advocate infanticide, killing babies after they're born,
yep.
And as they say, for no reason whatsoever, just if you want to kill them. And I call them pro-choice leaders only because they're opinion leaders, and every last one of them is pro-choice. That's what they call themselves. Okay, so anyway, back to Whippoor in the infanticide. And so Whippoor uses this poetic language to talk about infanticide. The children are laid out on the high ground. Indeed, the land is left over to its weakness, like the cutting of flax. That sounds biblical to me.
Yeah. For example, you know, from Exodus 9:31, where it refers to the flax is destroyed.
Yeah.
And it was from flax where they got their food, and also it's a fiber crop, right?
That's right. Indeed, the delta in its entirety will not be hidden. And the embarrassment of the delta, the land of Goshen. So they were ashamed of what happened starting there. And Lower Egypt puts trust in something or other. What can one do? Indeed, citizens are put to the grindstones, and those who used to don fine linen are beaten. So I don't think that's our
not quite
ninth, but we're getting there. Those who never used to see the day have gone out unhindered. Now, I think that might be.
Yeah, I think that qualifies.
Because, you know, the slaves who could never even take a day off, now they're totally free.
Yep.
They do whatever they want. They go out unhindered. Wealthy women, those who were on their husbands' beds, let them lie on boards. In other words, on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? Because the servants had taken their beds, obviously. There are no remedies for it. Noble women suffer like maidservants. Minstrels are at the looms. So in other words, the entertainers are now doing manual labor. Indeed, all female slaves are free with their tongues. And when their mistress speaks, it is irksome to the maidservants.
Wow. And this is so cool because we're getting an eyewitness account. We're getting extra biblical details, right?
Yeah.
Extra details that, you know, you don't have to put all this stuff in the Bible.
No.
But it's so interesting.
Yeah. So these female slaves, they told the women who used to be their bosses to shut up. And they would say whatever they wanted to say. So in other words, they had authority over their former mistresses, their masters. So I'd say that's a tenth time.
Yep.
Section 5 of Whippoor. It begins saying someone has separated the man from his household slaves, and men will say when they hear it, cakes are lacking for most children. Notice he didn't say all children, most. Mostly because the wealthy Egyptians now were poor. There is no food. Indeed, magnates,
who are wealthy people,
right, are hungry and perishing. Indeed, even the hot-tempered man says, if I knew where God is, then I would serve him.
The hot-tempered man.
That is so interesting. And I like the present tense, if I knew where God is. So in other words, Whippoor is writing still the current aftermath of all this. And if I knew where God is, then I would serve him. That is an amazing line because the Egyptians, they knew where their pagan idols were.
Yeah.
Remember they had all their city gods. Like they had the Heliopolis is maybe the best known example. The city of Heliopolis, city of the sun, Helios. And they had its god Ra, the sun god. And Autumn was another sun god.
And we
god.
Talked about a lot of the gods in the prior show, right? That were related to the plagues.
Yes. And
the plagues were an attack on all these false little g gods.
Right. And so that was the principal cult of that city. They knew how to find their gods.
Yep.
You just go to the city where that god had its temple, its main temple.
But yet this one is singular. If I knew where God it singular is,
then I would serve him. Indeed, all animals, their hearts weep. Cattle moan because of the state of the land. Fred, a bunch of the plagues had to do with livestock.
Took out, a lot of the livestock.
And The children of princes are dashed against the walls in infanticide again. The children of the neck are laid out on the high ground. Khnum, that's one of their idols, the Nile deity. He's supposed to bring prosperity. Khnum groans because of his weariness. And you know, they knew where to find Khnum. He was in that Elephantine island city. So they could find these other gods. But that guy who said, if I knew where God was, I would serve him. Indeed, terror kills. The frightened man opposes what is done against your enemies. You know, they remembered what Egypt did against the Hebrews, and it led to the plagues. So now they're just scared to death even to oppose anyone.
Yeah, anybody, yep.
What might God do to them? Then Ippur mentions their god Ptah and their sprinkling to him, like giving to him. And he says, why do you give to him, Ptah? There is no reaching him.
Yeah.
And that just
cracks
me up.
Complete waste of time.
Even though they know where he is, what's the purpose? You can't reach him. And that's the theme. When you get to section 11, that's the theme. But he just stays in character. He says, come on now, let's all give to our gods. Let's give everything.
Yeah, the sarcasm.
You know, because they're going to protect
us. The critics
us.
Totally miss.
Yes.
Intentionally, probably.
Then, indeed, slaves, something or other, you can't read it, throughout the land. Meanwhile, a man strikes his maternal brother. I think this is interesting. A man strikes his maternal brother. What is it that has been done? Now, is this just a brother against brother thing? I don't think so, because why would it say he strikes his maternal brother, the son of his mother?
Yeah.
And then he adds, what is it that has been done? You know, with all the destruction, it seems like this would be minor. But maybe this is a glimpse into some individual's life. And Fred, my thoughts on this passage, this is the most speculative I get through the whole text of Ippur. But it could very well be that this is a reference to Moses. Remember, he was raised as a prince of Egypt. By whom?
Yeah, the Pharaoh's daughter.
He wasn't adopted by a man, prince, but by the princess, right?
So he had an Egyptian mother from Ippur's perspective.
Exactly. And as we read in Exodus chapter 2, Moses strikes an Egyptian.
A brother.
In a way, in a sense. Not of his Hebrew father, but of his adopted Egyptian mother. So a man strikes his maternal brother, and that did set off the chain of events that eventually brought down all of Egypt. What is it that has been done?
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah, and I don't know if Ippur, you know, on Judgment Day, we'll see him. So one way or another, we could find out, perhaps. Remember that kid in school told his teacher about Jonah? And she said, well, what if Jonah never survived in a whale? And he said, well, when I get to heaven, I'll ask him. And she said, well, what if he's not there? And he said, then you can ask him. Right. So we could ask Ippur one way or another on Judgment Day.
Yep.
Section 6. Would that there were an end of men without conception, without birth. That's why I mentioned earlier, the women, Fred, would say, how could I bring a child into this world? Then would the land be quiet, from noise and tumult be no more. Indeed, neither fruit nor herbage can be found for the animals. And that's what the Bible says. All the crops were destroyed. Indeed, everywhere, barley has perished.
And again, we mentioned earlier from Exodus 9, we mentioned it earlier, the flax and barley were destroyed since the barley had headed and the flax was in bloom. So the barley is
very specific, right?
Yep, very specific.
And Ippur says, and men are stripped of clothes. And that's exactly Exodus chapter 12. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing.
And clothing, yeah.
So
I bet a lot of us missed that and clothing part.
Yeah.
But Ippur reminds us, we can go look in the Bible, because I didn't think of clothing when I thought of that. You think of the gold and silver.
Right. Because
silver
they made the gold
and gold.
Cap. Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Burl Ives. But no, yeah, the clothing also.
Then Ippur, I think he wishes at this point that he would be dead, because he says, would that I had raised my voice at that moment, that it might have saved me from the pain in which I am. So if he would have maybe at the time criticized Pharaoh, say, because he seemed to really be a sage and have access to the secret writings mm-hmm. of the nation. Maybe he could have just blasted Pharaoh and then he would have been saved from all this. Because
he'd have been executed.
Yeah, or maybe he would have left with the Hebrews. He should have. They did go out with a mixed multitude. I think there was mercy to those who wanted the refuge that the God of Abraham would provide. Indeed, the private council chamber, its writings are taken away, and the mysteries which were in it are laid bare. So here he is, the sage, something he had previous access to, it's now gone. Indeed, magic spells are divulged. Spells are frustrated because they are remembered by men. In other words, everybody knows the incantations.
Exactly.
Because it was all robbed and spread around.
Yep.
And none of it works anyway. Indeed, public offices, and I think he means storehouses there, public offices are opened and their inventories are taken away. The serf has become an owner of
serfs. Wow, there it is again. And that's the 11th time we've had Ipper refer to the rich becoming poor and the poor becoming rich.
Yes, indeed. Scribes are killed and their writings are taken away. And so that's hitting pretty close to home for him.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So he adds, woe is me because of the misery of this time. Indeed, the writings of the scribes and the cadaster, I think that's the property registers,
mm-hmm.
are destroyed. And the corn of Egypt is common property. The corn, you know, it was the American Indians. The Native Americans that introduced Europeans to corn. So when Old English said corn, like in the King James, it meant grain.
It meant grain, yeah. And so you think of Joseph's storehouses again. They must have been just open to the public.
Yes, right. And that, too, is another one of those details that fits.
Yep.
Indeed, the laws, and there I think it means the law books. Indeed, the laws of the council chamber are thrown out. Indeed, men walk on them in public places, and poor men break them up in the streets. Indeed, the poor man has attained to the state of the nine gods.
Wow, that's the 12th. We're now at a dozen examples.
Okay. Then that's the Ennead, their nine gods, mm-hmm. the famous Ennead, like Autumn and Nut and Osiris and Isis, all those gods.
The idiot?
The Ennead.
Okay.
It's similar.
You mean the idiot?
Similar etymology. Yeah. Indeed, the great council chamber is a popular resort, and poor men come and go to the great mansions.
Yeah, obviously that's the 13th.
13th, because even after the Hebrews left Egypt, Fred, the other slaves are going to take advantage. They're going to follow the example of the Jews and just take.
It's anarchy. And
And they'll use force also, which the Hebrews didn't have to do. Indeed, the children of magnates are ejected into the streets. And then is section 7. Behold, the fire has gone up on high, and its burning goes forth against the enemies of the land. You know, that could be, again, the plague of the hail and fire. And it could be the burning down of the gods of Egypt, you know, easily seen as the enemies of the land, while the true God, no one knows where to find him, and the fires can't reach him.
Yeah, interesting.
Behold, things have been done which have not happened for a long time past. The king has been deposed by the rabble.
Wow.
So, you know, ever since Joseph consolidated all the power in Egypt for Pharaoh, for a king to be disposed of, that didn't happen in the previous centuries. But in a long time past, that's when that kind of thing had happened. Behold, he who was buried as a falcon. Now, who was buried as a falcon? That's Pharaoh, was the son of Horus, you know, depicted as a falcon. He who was buried as a falcon, and what the pyramid concealed has become empty. So in other words, the Tomb Raiders were back.
The Tomb Raiders are back, yeah.
Because Egypt was too powerful after Joseph for people to plunder the pyramids. But now, what has not happened for a long time past is being done. And by the way, Fred, the last pyramid built by Akhmos I, the Egyptologist estimated about 1525 B.C., so with the plagues in the Bible time frame of about 1445 BC, so 80 years later so, and that's if the Egyptologist dates are accurate, because the Bible's date is accurate. But that puts us in the general ballpark in the time frame of why they stopped building
the pyramids.
Yeah, that's
an interesting connection.
Right?
Yeah.
Because Egypt was destroyed. They could no longer build pyramids. Behold, it has befallen that the land has been deprived of the kingship. Of course, right? And he adds, by a few lawless men. Because some relative of Pharaoh goes up and becomes king, and some thug goes up and says, oh, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And kills him.
Yep.
Behold, men have fallen into rebellion against Uraeus. That's the snake symbol of the Pharaoh's headdress. The Ray or Ra, the sun god, and then even she who makes the two lands content. So that's the upper and lower Egypt. It says she, a goddess, probably Isis. You know, Egypt's ultimate goddess was Isis.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, just a reference to these gods. They previously made upper and lower Egypt content. Not anymore. The residence is thrown down in a moment. And that's the palace.
Yep.
People could see rsr.org/pharaoh to see how the word for Pharaoh's palace became the word for Pharaoh.
So this next one's really interesting.
Behold, Egypt is fallen to the pouring of water.
Pouring of water. Hmm. That sounds
biblical.
Yeah.
It's right out of Exodus.
Yep. Sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah. And he who poured water on the ground has carried off the strong man in misery. So, Fred, this is the first, and I think the only reference to who is responsible for all this destruction.
Yeah.
And it's just wild to think of this. The whole nation of Egypt is in ruin. Whose fault is it? Ippur hasn't said until section 7. So he's halfway through his papyrus.
He who poured water on the ground.
Yeah. The gods of Egypt and Pharaoh, they were only guilty by omission. They didn't protect the land. But here is the culprit, the one who caused Egypt to fall. And what is it that he has said to have done? Did he march an army into Egypt? No. The worst thing imaginable. He poured
water on the ground.
On the ground.
And he mentions it twice.
Yes. That he poured water. So this comes right out of the Bible.
Yeah. Exodus chapter 4. The Lord said to Moses, and it shall be, if they do not believe even these two signs, or listen to your voice, then you shall take water from the river, that is the Nile, and pour it on the dry land. The water which you take from the river will become blood on the dry land.
Wow. So we've just read Ippur tying the destruction of Pharaoh and his government with this man who pours water on the ground.
Yet there's no connection to this in
the
Exodus.
Come on. I mean, let me read it again. The residence, that's the palace, is thrown down in a moment. Behold, Egypt is fallen to pouring of water, and he who poured water on the ground has carried off the strong man in misery. Pharaoh went with his army to the Red Sea.
Yep.
The Bible, this is interesting. It doesn't actually say that this took place.
This particular pouring on the ground.
Do you remember that, Fred?
Well, yeah. God said, he told Moses, if they don't believe these first two things.
What two things?
So the first one was the rod turning into a snake, right?
Their staff turns into serpents.
Yep.
God said to Moses, you could show Pharaoh this sign.
Yep.
If he doesn't believe it, then your hand
could turn into leprous. Yeah, that'd be a neat trick.
And then what?
And then the third one was pouring water onto the ground and having it turn into blood.
Yeah, and the Bible doesn't actually say that Moses did that.
Yeah, it more refers later to him taking his rod and touching the Nile.
Which is what began the first plague, the Nile turning to blood.
Yep.
But what's interesting is that Moses would have obeyed God. And God said, if they don't believe this sign, do this one. If they don't believe that sign, do this one. Pour the water on the ground. So, of course, the Bible, when it tells its historical accounts and then it retells them,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's ellipses. It leaves out.
Yeah, it's not required to provide every single detail.
Every time.
You can't.
Over and over.
Yeah.
Right. It becomes unreadable. But so here, Ippur is filling in a detail that is presumed by Exodus. You could infer that it happened, but Ippur tells us it did happen.
It did happen.
And we saw that earlier in this series, Real Science Radio's list of evidence for the Exodus, And that's where God said to the Hebrew midwives, kill the male children when they're born. And the two head midwives, they refused, and God blessed them.
Yep. But that doesn't mean there were others did.
The others obviously killed the children.
There were probably some others that didn't also, right? But
right,
plenty
probably.
Plenty would have.
So we saw the epidemic of infants buried in the tombs, buried in the graves around Avaris at that time.
Yeah.
So very interesting what you could learn. The Bible is God's word. So it is where we go for doctrine, for theology, to understand salvation, where we came from, where we're headed. But the world is filled with God's word in a sense, because everything that has happened in the context of God's creation and his intervention into human history.
Yep. Good point.
So then Egypt is falling to the pouring of water, and behold, the residence is afraid because of want, the palace. Behold, and this is in the aftermath, the land has knotted itself up with confederacies, and the coward takes the brave man's property.
Wow, that's the 14th time.
Oh, is it 14?
Yeah, that's 14.
I'm glad you're keeping track, Fred. Behold, the serpent, and something about the dead, he who could not make a sarcophagus for himself is now the possessor of a tomb.
Well, that's number 15.
15. Behold, the possessors of tombs are ejected onto the high ground, while he who could not make a coffin for himself is now the possessor of a treasury.
Okay, now that's 16. Now, Ifward's going ham here now.
He's going to town. Behold, this has happened to men. He who could not build a room for himself is now a possessor of walls.
Ding, 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 17.
I think that's like of the whole house.
Yep.
Behold, the magistrates of the land are driven out throughout the land, are driven out from the palaces. Behold, noble ladies are now on rafts, and magnates are in the labor establishment.
Yep, white collar to blue collar.
Right. While he who could not sleep even on walls is now the possessor of a bed.
Yep, so that's 18.
So you couldn't even hang a hammock on the wall. Now you have a bed. Behold, the possessor of wealth now spends the night thirsty, while he who once begged his dregs for himself is now the possessor of overflowing bowls.
Yep. Number 19.
19. We're on a roll here, Fred. Behold, the possessors of robes are now in rags, while he who could not weave for himself is now a possessor of fine linen.
So this is number 20.
20 times. Behold, he who could not build a boat for himself is now the possessor
of a fleet. 21.
21. This is in the aftermath, and all those other servants who would copy the demands of the Hebrews. Their erstwhile owner looks at them, but they are not his. So the former owner of the slaves and of the boats, really, he looks at all that, but he doesn't own them anymore. Behold, he who had no shade is now the possessor of shade.
That's 22.
Well, and so that means he owns property with trees, canopies, all that. Behold, he who was ignorant of the lyre is now the possessor of a harp, while he who never sang for himself now vaunts the songstress goddess.
Wow. So that would be 23 times.
Fred,
that's
I
amazing.
Think right there, we're about halfway through Ipawer. I think that might be a good place to end. 23 times in 11 pages, Ipawer returns to his theme that the rich are now poor and the slaves have become wealthy.
Because that would be just, again, we mentioned incredibly mind-boggling how that could ever happen. That can't happen without supernatural intervention.
And it freaked him out. That's why he's writing this way. So we are here.
Imagine seeing that. You can't see that without there being God involved. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yes, right. And that's what God did. He went to war against the gods of the Egyptians. He destroyed them, and he gave a testimony to the entire world. The Hebrews, their Ark of the Testimony, the Ark of the Covenant, inside of it were three things: the Ten Commandments, which is the law, and the miracles. It was Aaron's rod that budded, it bloomed ripe almonds, and the quart of manna, the bread from heaven. So inside the Ark of the Testimony was the testimony against mankind, the law and the miracles. God did these miracles in front of nations.
Think we'll ever find the Ark?
In front of governors. I I don't know.
Yeah.
I imagine not, but who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yep.
Maybe in the tribulation.
Yep.
Boy, that'd be something.
There's
huh?
two missing arcs.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, two missing arcs. Two totally different kinds of arcs, but they're both containers,
yep.
right? So thank you, Fred.
Well, thanks, Bob. This is incredible.
This was wow. part six of our series on the evidence for the Exodus.
And like you said, we'll get to talk to this guy on Judgment Day. More. Hopefully it's in the right side of the courtroom.
We'll find out. Probably
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
But we will find out. And so I really look forward to concluding Ipawer. And thank you, Fred, so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Bob.
So this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork.